Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading this morning, text 14, Canto 5, Chapter 10. Maharaj Rahugana meets Jan Bharat. And we're not going to chant responsibly because it's prose. And I'm not very good at reciting prose, but I'll make an effort. Shri Suka Uvacha Etavad Anuvada Paribhashaya Pratyudhirya Munivara Upashama Shila Uparatanatmya Nimita Upabhogena Karma Rabdham Vyapanayam Raja Yanam Api Tatovaha, or something like that. Translation. Shukadeva Goswami said, "Oh, Maharaj Parikshit, when King Rahugana chastised the exalted devotee Jad Bharat with harsh words, that peaceful, saintly person tolerated it all and replied properly. Nescience is due to the bodily conception, and Jad Bharat was not affected by this false conception. Out of his natural humility, he never considered himself a great devotee, and he agreed to suffer the results of his past karma. Like an ordinary man, he thought that by carrying the palanquin, he was destroying the reactions of his past misdeeds. Thinking in this way, he began to carry the palanquin as before." And purport by Srila Prabhupada. "An exalted devotee of the Lord never thinks that he is a paramahansa or a liberated person. He always remains a humble servant of the Lord. In all reverse conditions, he agrees to suffer the results of his past life. He never accuses the Lord of putting him into a distressed condition. These are the signs of an exalted devotee. Tatenu kampam sasamikshamanaha. When suffering reversed conditions, the devotee always considers that the reverse conditions are the Lord's concessions. He's never angry with his master. He is always satisfied with the position his master offers. In any case, he continues performing his duty in devotional service. Such a person is guaranteed promotion back home, back to Godhead, as stated in the Bhagavatam 10.14.8. Tate nukampam susamikshamano ujana evatma kritam vipakam ridvag vapur bhir vidhan namaste jiveta yomuktipade sadayabhak. Translation. My dear Lord, one who constantly waits for your causeless mercy to be bestowed upon him and who goes on suffering the reactions of his past misdeeds, offering you respectful obeisances from the core of his heart, is surely eligible for liberation, for it has become his rightful claim." So this is the first verse following all of Jad Bharat's words to King Rahugana, giving him a transcendental deluge of knowledge and wisdom and detachment from his misconceptions as the body and the king and all those things. So now it's first verse of Shukadeva Goswami summarizing or analyzing what has happened thus far. And he's, in this verse, he's pointing to the yet another qualification of Jad Bharat. And this qualification of Jad Bharat is, one of them, is his humility. And that humility helps protect him from Maya. And part of Maya's bad feelings when people say bad stuff. He's not affected by the bad statements made by the king. He, as said before, in the previous verse, he responded properly. Prabhupada's purport, he responded properly. Right here. Here. And he then replied properly. No resentment towards the king. No resentment towards Krishna. No feeling of sadness or anger or any of those other kind of mode of ignorance feelings. None of that. He was protected by this relationship with the personality of Godhead. Now if we go back and remember who Jad Bharat was two lifetimes ago, he's Bharat Maharaj. And as we hear from the Bhagavatam, he was on the level of Bhava Bhakti. He was on the level of Bhava Bhakti. He's very, very elevated. Here's a detail that comes from Jiva Goswami in his Bhakti Sandarbha. Very interesting. Very interesting. There's this common question about Bharat Maharaj or attaining the stage of Bhava Bhakti. How is it possible if you attain the stage of Bhava Bhakti that you can fall? Because Bhava Bhakti is the stage of spontaneous devotion. There's no prompt needed for spontaneous devotion. It's spontaneous. And one is feeling ecstasy. So, you know, that common question, why would you leave ecstasy? Why? And, you know, so, and then the other kind of, the other side of it is, oh my goodness, if I don't reach Prema Bhakti, I can fall again. Sheesh. So, I'm discouraged. So, how is that ever going to be possible? I may as well throw in the towel and just forget it. Neither of those. Jiva Goswami explains by making reference to a verse that says in this story of Bharat Maharaj that the deer represented prarabdha karma. What's prarabdha karma? Prarabdha karma is karma that is fructifying now. There's other kinds of karma. Karma that hasn't fructified yet. Karma that's soon to fructify. Karma that's still in seed. But prarabdha karma is now. So the deer, according to Jiva Goswami, was a manifestation of Bharat Maharaj's prarabdha karma. And then he reasons, but bhakti, there was some unfinished hankering for something. So the deer manifest. But bhakti is stronger than prarabdha karma. Bhakti can just eliminate prarabdha karma. So it didn't go for becoming attached to the deer because of it was his karma to do so. Rather, he made a conscious choice to abandon his bhakti. And that abandonment of bhakti was caused by another thing, not prarabdha karma, but a previous offense. And due to that previous offense, he chose to give up bhakti and become attached to the deer instead. So even in the bhava bhakti stage, consequences of offense may still exist. In the prema stage, they're gone. You can read about this. It's a subsequent Acharya Vishwanath gives this whole chart of at what point in time is there, it's squeaky clean. There's nothing residue left. There's still free will, even in that bhava stage, and he made a choice. And the choice he made was influenced by a previous offense and some contamination of heart, and he chose foolishly, even in the bhava stage. So we have to make conscious choices every moment, every moment, every moment, every moment, every moment. We can be moved by our guna and karma. We can be moved by the reactions of our past sins. We can be moved by the reactions of offenses. Or we can be moved by Krishna bhakti. We have to, out of the menu, we have to choose Krishna bhakti consistently. And bhakti has the power not only to remove karma, prarabdha karma, but to remove the reactions of past offenses. But we have to make the conscious choice so that the power of bhakti acts against the reactions of our past offenses. And the past offenses are not just one lifetime. Jiva Goswami explains it's cumulative, many, many, many lifetimes. We got a whole bunch of baggage of unwanted stuff. Bhakti is the only means, according to the scriptures, it is the only means that can eliminate all that baggage. There isn't another means. It is the only means. And so bhakti is really important, and then how to nourish bhakti and how to make proper choices. That's like the essence of our life's assignment. Jad Bharat was a self-reliant soul. So he's not going to make wrong choices. He's not going to get into a tit-for-tat thing with the king. Rather, what Prabhupada is explaining in the purport, he's accepting this difficult circumstance, compromising his position as a exalted soul, Paramahamsa Vaishnav, to become palanquin carrier of a king that's in Maya. Abusive king in Maya. Become his palanquin carrier. No problem. So the factors that are mentioned here are his humility, his acceptance of the circumstance to be due to his past misdeeds. Now, what are his past misdeeds? Well, we don't know, and maybe he doesn't know, but he's just a natural disposition. My past misdeeds, no problem. I accept the reaction of my past misdeeds. And instead of trying to counteract the reaction to my past misdeeds, I'm not going to do that. I'll accept the reaction to my past misdeeds. And instead, I'm going to give full attention to one thing. What's that one thing? Being attached to the lotus feet of the Lord. The one thing. You know, so the energy can move, duality can move this way, and duality can move, misfortune can come, good fortune can come. My mind doesn't budge an inch from the lotus feet of the Lord. The lotus feet of the Lord means, it implies, Buddha service. Humble service. And my service can be this, in this circumstance. It can be that, in that circumstance, no problem. It's to say it again in a different way. It doesn't mean that there isn't a sense of difficulty, or using a common word, misfortune. The misfortune is coming my way because of my past misdeeds. So I accept misfortune. Or it can be a little more neutral and say, well, it's not really misfortune. Misfortune, good fortune, who can say? Because behind, like the discussion yesterday, behind the circumstance that looks like and feels like misfortune can be simply an opportunity for purification, deepening my position of taking shelter of Krishna. That's the good fortune. So it looks like ill fortune, but it's the kindness of Krishna giving me an opportunity to become freed from some bad stuff that's still inside, and the reactions that I'm due to that bad stuff, that's still the samskaras that are the bad ones, and an opportunity to take deeper shelter and make some good ones. The vasana, or the attitude of simply serving Krishna, whatever the circumstance. That's the Paramahamsa. That's the goal, or the model, or the that which we aspire for. So we may not be there. We're definitely not there. But we need to know the goal. And then, according to the capacity that we have, the faith, the strength of conviction, the quality of our hearing and chanting, turn to the quality of the hearing and chanting. As they say, for God's sake. Turn to the quality of chanting instead of something else. Some, you know, the bad feelings, or the retaliation, or the complaining to God, or complaining about God. Why am I being subjected to this? The reference made twice in the purport is the circumstance of Lord Brahma in the room that I stay upstairs. There's this print on the wall of Lord Brahma with his four heads offering prayers to Krishna, who is standing beneath a tree, and in his right hand is a lump of yogurt and fruit, staring with unblinking eyes at Lord Brahma, who is folding his palms and offering this prayer and many other prayers to Krishna, chapter 14 of Canto 10. And the circumstances, in short, he's going to get a big reaction because he just made a big offense. It wasn't a deliberate offense, but it was an offense. He was, his curiosity got the better of him. His curiosity was, what's the extent of Krishna's mystic powers? I want to see the extent of Krishna's mystic powers, which of course is unlimited. So Krishna reciprocated. He showed him this amazing vision. But the offense was, he kidnapped the calves and the cowherd boys. It's a crime. And he interrupted Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes with his beloved calves and cowherd boys. Shame on him. Gonna get a big reaction. Krishna then showed him this amazing vision of the identical forms of calves and cowherd boys, and then he went back in the cave, and they're in the cave, and he went back, and there they are with Krishna, the calves and the cowherd boys. And then they're still sitting there, the cowherd boys, and the calves mooing. Simultaneously with that scene comes all of them, each one of them manifested forms of Narayana, and details and details. All of the transcendental potencies of each of the forms of Narayana were manifest personified in this cacophony of sound of their offering prayers to the personality of God at each one of the forms of Narayana. Tumultuous sound. And the personified Vedas and all the Devas and all of his potencies, internal and external, personified, singing his praises in choice select poetry. And then, poof, it all disappeared. The cowherd boys, the calves, and these forms of Narayana, gone. And there's Krishna, standing beneath a tree, looking with unblinking eyes and smiling at Lord Brahma. Didn't say anything, but you wanted to see? And then Lord Brahma gets it. He offers his prayers, beautiful, beautiful prayers. And this one, text 8, is he's recognizing he's going to receive big reaction. Now, he doesn't get a big reaction, but that's what he's feeling. I deserve a big reaction. So now, I'm not praying to you, please give me a lighter sentence for my offense. Whatever you wish to give, I'm ready. I accept it. So intelligence can go to minimizing or counteracting or doing something about the difficulty that is going to come or is coming or came in the past. We can invest consciousness in the temporary due to our involvement with matter, good, bad, and mixed. Or we can do what Brahma is advising, which is what Jed Bharat is doing. His mind is fixed. He's speaking transcendence. He knows who he is. He knows the king doesn't know who he is. And he's okay with that. He's clear about the circumstance and he's ready to accept. If this is the will of the Lord, no problem, I'll pick the palanquin and carry the palanquin. With this abusive Inmaya king riding on the palanquin, no problem. I'm just going to carry out my duty, even if it's the temporal one. We were speaking yesterday about the material Swadharma and the spiritual Swadharma. He's not abandoning his spiritual Swadharma to take up a temporary Swadharma. I'm going to carry the palanquin of the king if that's what the king wants. Now, there's more to come. The king changes his mind about what he wants. Because common, when in this case it's King Rahugana who is going to say, I didn't understand who you were. But why didn't he understand who he was? Because he's covered. In his case, covered by the bodily conception. And with that pride, I'm the king. But many persons, even seeing the personality of Godhead, in this case it's a great devotee, like Durvasa Muni, didn't understand the exalted position of Maharaj Ambarish. Why? Pride. I'm a Brahmana. He's a Kshatriya. He's getting more honor than me. Pride. Due to the bodily conception. Super elevated. Partial incarnation of Lord Shiva, covered by Maya. That's a problem. Powerful person that's covered by Maya. But he couldn't recognize. And then eventually he could recognize. And then the profuse apology, which Rahugan is going to also do. And there's many other. By the mercy of Maharaj Ambarish, Durvasa Muni got it. Now, it doesn't say what happened after that. Maybe he lost it after that, but at least for some period of time he got it. Another one of my favorite pastimes in Bhagavatam is Muchukunda. Muchukunda was a great devotee who had simply heard about Krishna, heard a description of what Krishna looks like. He became a great devotee. But he couldn't see him properly because he was angry. His sleep was disturbed. He was angry. So he looked at Krishna and saw in this cave and saw this effulgent person. Who are you? Are you a demigod? Are you? And then, and what's your family? And, well, I shouldn't ask you what your, I'll tell you what my family is. And who? So Krishna gave the full answer and said, I've come before you because you're my devotee. You've been hankering to see me. Now you can see me as you like. So what, even a devotee, great devotee, such a great devotee that Krishna came personally to honor him and give him some service to incinerate Kaliyavana. Because of anger, couldn't see him properly. Coverings, even for a fantastic devotee like Muchukunda, you know, can impede our Krishna consciousness. Of course, very quickly it was restored by Krishna's mercy. And other examples and other examples. So, covering of Maya is the byproduct of forgetfulness of Krishna. So the cure is don't forget Krishna. And we take up things that help us remember Krishna. That's nectar devotion. There's 64 items and so many other things that we do so that we don't forget Krishna. And when you don't forget Krishna, you're protected. Even difficult circumstances may come. That's the purport. Even difficult circumstances may come. Doesn't mean you become this devotee that mind never departs from Krishna and you're not going to have any problems. You never get old, you never get diseased, you never have somebody say something mean to you. The weather's always nice. And, you know, everybody's on time for everything they're supposed to do. Because, you know, you're this nice devotee that always remembers Krishna. Not like that. The material world is a place of duality. That's the starting point from Bhagavad Gita. Matra sparsha stukonte. So, the world is what it is, but how do you navigate your way through this world that's not spiritual? It's filled with this and that. It's filled with duality. Don't budge an inch from the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord and care. Continue in the humble mood of service as Rahugana is ready to do. Excuse me, as Jed Bard is ready to do. And supposing Rahugana doesn't get down off his palanquin and offer obeisances. No problem. Amani na manadena. Kirtaniyasa dahari. One is ready to offer all respects to others without any expectation of respect in return. And last, just going back to the first statement the Prabhupada makes in the purport, one who's in that position never thinks of themselves as exalted. They never think of themselves as exalted. Maybe that's what I'll speak about today for the home programs. Lord Chaitanya and the associates of Lord Chaitanya, not considering by their behavior, they're showing their Krishna consciousness, they're not considering themselves to be Paramahansa or whatever the personality of God. They're exhibiting through their pastimes the character of one who is a Paramahansa, who never considers himself to be a Paramahansa. There's no expectation. Now, Durvasa Muni was expecting respect. You sip water. I'm going to kill you. He tried. He failed. And even if he hadn't failed, just like the son of the sage Sringi, who cursed Maharaj Parikshit to die, Maharaj Parikshit died. Krishna didn't intervene. And Maharaj Parikshit didn't call upon Krishna to intervene. Maharaj Parikshit, this is, again, Jiva Goswami discusses this. He didn't ask Krishna, please take away or minimize or neutralize or something rather this curse of the young boy. I offended the king. I deserve whatever you send my way. He wasn't blaming the boy. And he wasn't blaming Krishna. Accepting whatever the reaction was. And he died. He was bitten by this. There's like intrigue even before that happened. But bitten by the snake bird and is with such venom that his body instantly burst into flames. He went back to Godhead because his mind was fixed upon the personality of God. He got a free ticket. Didn't have to like hang around and endure more. But if Krishna wanted him to stay around some more and do more service, fine. But accepting Krishna's arrangement, exactly what Prabhupada is writing in the purport. So sometimes the devotee, like Maharaj Parikshit in this particular example, doesn't exhibit the power of the Lord's protection, but he exhibits the power of bhakti, doesn't deviate from that. Just see the exalted nature. No fear. And no bluff. No fear. Not a trace of fear. Because when there's attachment to anything other than Krishna, there's fear. No fear. Not, you know, a decal in somebody's car. It says, bluff. No fear. There's fear. Because we're attached to the temporary. Some people are crazy and they're attached to dying or something, but no fear. I want to be with Krishna. I want to be in Krishna's service. And singular. So we accept those things that are favorable for attaining that. And part of that favorable acceptance is hearing about these wonderful qualifications of Jadvara. And then we'll hear shortly about how Rahugana responds. Can you imagine what he's feeling at this point? Okay. Can you tap him? And he's snoring. Okay. Any discussion? Yes.
I have two questions and a comment.
Okay.
So the comment was in the 11th canto, Krishna is Uddhava speaking to Krishna. Krishna is first speaking to Uddhava, and he mentions even if great devotees are spat on, insulted, etc., not affected, Krishna's words are like, how is that possible? Because even learned people cannot tolerate the insults of others.
Right.
And then Krishna goes on to say that the sharp words are more hurtful than arrows.
Yeah. Bodily pain and mental pain are different.
And then the whole story of Vani Brahmana. So that was an appreciation that he's so powerful that he was not able, he didn't take any offense at all to what Narottama said. My question is, in In Gita Nagari retreat some years ago, I think it was the acceptance and progress retreat.
Yeah.
Your first class, there was at the end of the discussion, there was a question that came up about abusers being in abusive situations.
Mm.
You mentioned how he's in an abusive situation. And he went along with it, assuming or taking it that this is his past sinful reaction. Somebody brought that up, and then your response was, we can say yes to Krishna, but no to the circumstance.
Mm.
Here he's saying yes to the circumstance. How does...
Because it wasn't compromising. It was, back to your comment, it was harsh words. But what's the problem? It's not... carrying a palanquin of a king who speaks harsh words. What's the problem? It's different than a relationship where someone is manipulating or psychologically, you know, abusing and physically abusing and sexually abusing and mean-spirited. So in this case, the king spoke harshly, specifically the language, he spoke harshly. That's not a problem. And then there's degrees of abuse, and you don't have to stay in the abusive relationship. You can make choices. He's making a very practical and reasonable choice. Depends on the circumstance, what choice you make. Next. I want to make a comment on your comment. The file that I sent to Sri Radhika about Saint Francis has exactly this kind of example, where Leo, the assistant of Saint Francis, is asking, "What's the highest bliss?" Did you read it?
Yes.
Yeah.
I read it before too.
Oh, you read it before. Okay. Well, the highest bliss is, we go back to the monastery and there's somebody waiting for us and says, get out of here. Who are you, you know, scoundrel? Get lost. Hit the road. And then, you know, and then et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, come back again and the fellow says the same thing. Get out of here. And this is the greatest bliss. You know, accepting, it's a little bit like the discussion about Advaitacharya wishing Lord Chaitanya to chastise him. Lord Chaitanya wouldn't do it because Lord Chaitanya considered him a form of the Lord, so he would never chastise him. So Advaitacharya had to act in a miscreant way, teaching Yoga Vasishta, the impersonal conclusions of Patanjali Yoga, so that Lord Chaitanya then came to chastise him. Deliberately to get, be like, yay, he's showing his mercy by chastising me. Thank you. So, that's transcendental mood. Ecstasy is being at the feet of the Supreme Lord regardless of this extreme, that extreme of circumstance. So it's not the bad circumstance makes ecstasy, or the good circumstance makes ecstasy. It's being in the mood of humble service to the Supreme Lord equals ecstasy. So it's not just our tradition. There's the comment on your comment. Next question.
My question is coming from Jalabhar's situation, where he doesn't have any desire necessarily for quote-unquote liberation or be comfortable or be inconvenienced or anything like that. He's not desiring that. And then,
because he's already there. Go ahead.
In your presentation today, you were saying how we're moved by guna and karma, or we're being moved by a past sinful reaction, or we're moved by offense. Better be moved by Krishna Bhakti.
Yeah.
So when that desire for liberation, so to speak, or no inconvenience, is that part of guna and karma, or where does it, what's that?
It's that part of a desire that's separate from Krishna. Whatever the category it falls under, it's a desire separate from Krishna. Now, supposing somebody has a desire separate from Krishna. Akama, sarvakama, va, moksha. So engage that. You know, ideals don't have a desire other than Krishna. But if one has another desire other than Krishna, engage in tivra bhakti. With the faith that this will carry me beyond the desire other than Krishna. And I may not even understand it's going to carry me beyond, like Dhruva. It'll carry me beyond the desire to get a kingdom. But it'll carry one beyond any other desire. Tivra bhakti, bhakti that's taken up in that manner is very powerful. Bhakti not taken up in that manner is very powerful. We just don't get the full power. You always have a question, so I'm looking.
Quick question. So, you said this is about the Bharat.
Speak slowly.
This is about the Bharat who had
Adana. Bharat Maharaj? Okay.
So, you said that because of his leftover hampering that he had attachment to deer.
That's not what I said. I'll say it again. According to Jiva Goswami, the manifestation of the deer was a byproduct of prarabdha karma.
And then because of his past offenses, he had the desire to choose that he's going to be,
Yes, he chose other than Krishna.
So in this, and that lifetime he was practicing bhakti.
Yes, he was.
So how, even if he doesn't practice the bhakti, so maybe he's going to choose by his free will that attachment to deer. So what is the bhakti benefits for him?
I don't know what you mean. I don't understand your question. Try it again. Don't go way back to the beginning. Just do the question part.
My question is, so he practiced bhakti in that life. So because of his pastoral sin, he had the choice to be attached with the deer. So how does this bhakti, what he practiced, help him in
making the right choices.
Making the right choices. Because he anyway chose his, he used his free will to get attached to that thing. So.
Yeah. Let me say back your question. How is it that his previous bhakti made it possible for him even to make the wrong choice? Well, there's things in making our free will choices. We're cultivating choosing Krishna, or say yes to Krishna, say yes to Krishna, say yes to Krishna, say yes to Krishna. But back there, maybe something else. You know, say no to Krishna a whole bunch, and it may be sin, and it may be. Worse than sin is offense. Worse than sin is offense. So I got all this stuff back here. I'm practicing saying yes to. So the likely tendency is when this deer manifests or our prarabdha karma manifests to say yes to Krishna. There's not a guarantee. Even on the bhava stage. So what to speak of us? It helps us make the say yes to Krishna choice. The answer to your question is, our previous practice of bhakti makes that natural tendency, you can say habit or duty, but even spontaneous tendency to say yes to Krishna in any circumstance. Still there's this free will that, if blocked, it's a big if, but if blocked by some previous offense and then some anartha that's within the heart, I can choose the unusual say no to Krishna. To know, back to your question. What's the benefit of our previous bhakti when we're confronted with circumstances? It's the likelihood that we'll say yes to Krishna by our previous bhakti. And all the other things that go with bhakti, you know, the sense of connectedness, the sense of protection, the sense of happiness, the sense of well-being, the sense of this is right. Still operative is the sutta. Even in the stage of perfection, Baba is just prior to perfection, even in the stage of perfection, free will exists. It's not that when we become liberated, free will is just taken away from us. We still have free will options. It's the nature of the soul, through part and parcel of Krishna, who has unlimited free will. So the philosophical point, or the analytical point, is even in the Bhava Bhakti stage, there may be traces, residual traces, quite unusual, but residual traces of the reactions of past offense, which are anarthas in the heart. And one can choose or be blocked by that and choose not Krishna. It's unusual, highly unusual, but it's possible. That's the analytical. How could it happen and why didn't it happen? He made the choice. It was a dumb choice, but he made the choice. You have something? No. Bill?
I was thinking back on one of the stories, like when Hanuman, when given the choice to go to Krishna's abode, he chose to stay with Ramachandra, be devoted to Ramachandra.
I'm unaware of that pastime. Hanuman was given the choice to go to Krishna's abode?
That's the story I heard.
I haven't heard that one. Where'd you hear that one?
I think it was a Bhagavad Gita class a number of years ago when Rupa was given the class.
I'm unaware of this.
Okay, this will give a couple of examples for a normal question. Let's say Hanuman was devoted to Ramachandra.
Naturally. Eternally.
Eternally. And let's say you have Sri Vaishnavas are devoted to the name of Narayan in the same way we're devoted to Krishna.
Naturally.
So the question I have is, being devoted to one of Krishna's expansions or incarnations, is that just as good as being devoted to Krishna himself in the long run?
Yes and no. Yes, in terms of destination of going to the form of the Lord that one is attached to. Narayana, attachment leads to Vaikuntha. And it's beyond the material world. Attached to Ram, one goes to Ayodhya, topmost position in the Vaikuntha realm. An attachment to Krishna takes one to Krishna Loka, which is even beyond Haridam, beyond Ayodhya Dham. So it's, and the mood in Goloka is different than the mood in Vaikuntha. There's the Dwarka mood, Mathura mood, and Vrindavan mood. So in the sense of being a pure devotee of the Lord, like, for example, Prahlad Maharaj, he's a role model for us. He's a Vaikunthavasi. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu loved to hear the pastimes of Dhruva, who was also a Vaikunthavasi, and Prahlad Maharaj, a Vaikunthavasi. Pure devotion, no question about it. Pure devotion. So that's the similarity. Pure devotion, nothing else. Squeaky clean, nothing else. Pure devotion. And at the same time, the nature of the devotion of love for Krishna in Goloka has characteristics that are not found in the love for Lord Narayan in Vaikuntha. And there's especially the sweetness of the pastimes of Krishna and so forth and so on. So, is it the same? Transcendentally the same. and different at the same time. So that's my answer. Therefore, we don't we have a particular affection for Krishna in Vrindavan, and there's reason for it, a transcendental reason, the sweetness of Krishna's pastimes. And Gaudiya Vaishnavas are particularly attracted to the sweetness of Krishna's pastimes. Now, like Lord Chaitanya stayed at the house of Venkatabhatta for 4 months, and they had talks about pure devotion. And there was absolute respect for one another. Venkatabhatta understood Lord Chaitanya is on a platform beyond us, devotees of Narayan. And I, what's the current generation? What's his name? It starts with a P. There's something like 14 generations following Venkatabhatta. Padmanabha, I think, Padmanabha Goswami, a descendant of, in the line of Venkatabhatta, Padmanabha, something, Padmanabha Bhatta, I'm not sure that's his name. Parashurabhatta. Yes? No? Don't know. The fourth, something in the line of Venkatabhatta. He's very clear about Lord Chaitanya's position. How did he learn from his father, and how did he learn from his father and from Venkatabhatta? He's completely loyal to his tradition. And he has special appreciation for Lord Chaitanya and the gift of Lord Chaitanya, the gifts of Vraja Bhakti. He's loyal to his tradition. He's just this amazing Vaishnava. So, same and different. Yes?
Maharaj,
speak into the microphone.
Maharaj, this is kind of like a basic question.
Basic question.
But like, what is like the difference between sin, offenses, and aparad?
Okay. A short version. But there's a longer version. You can listen to that seminar on anartha nivritti. The anatomy of anarthas. Longer version, but a short version. Functional definition of the distinction between sin and offense or aparad is sin can be readily eradicated by bhakti. Sin, by definition, means it's difficult to remove an impression of sin. So it's like somebody that steals, or somebody that takes intoxication, or somebody that, you know, is a sex monger, or some addiction. And, you know, once they do, when they steal, or they this or the that, that sin makes an impression that tends to repeat itself, and it's very difficult to remove it. That's the functional definition of sin. It's against the codes of mankind and very difficult to remove. That's what sin is. But the power of bhakti can eradicate not only the reaction, but the tendency. That's sin. Then offense is more serious. It's not just going against the codes of dharma, but it's the Lord, his name, his devotee, or the soul not recognizing their spiritual nature and treating them in an ordinary manner. The deity, the name, the devotee, the soul within, all living beings, non-devotee, whatever the species of life, and not having spiritual regard, and then treating, just like, say, animal slaughter. It's sinful, but it's worse in addition to sinful. And that's what it results in something, an anartha. So Aparad, its byproduct is anartha. And anartha, different than sin, or sinful reaction, is it has the power to block the power of bhakti. So even you can do bhakti if there's residual in this lifetime or and or previous lifetimes impurities of heart, it blocks the power of bhakti. Sin and its reaction can be quickly eradicated by bhakti. Anartha, the result of offense, is far more difficult. So there's a distinction between them, the three. Sin, offense, and the consequence of offense, anartha, contaminations of heart. The reactions of sin commonly are stored in the mind and the body, let's say lust. So it's stored in the body and stimulus is there and it comes out, or anger, or people that have like a gambling addiction. It's just like they're compulsive living. It's the body and the mind. It's not at the soul level, the body and the mind. So it's more readily checked by the power of bhakti. Something else? Yes.
I have two questions.
Okay. Go ahead.
Considering the passing of Jira Bharata, while realizing in the form of deer that I have made a wrong choice, and was very cautious.
Very cautious.
Very cautious. Very cautious. The practicing sadhaka cannot imitate, but the lesson...
That's correct.
But the lesson...
Be very cautious. That's the lesson. And what strengthens the caution is the power of bhakti. So we want to fuel or nourish the power of bhakti. We want to do those things that are going to help bhakti become stronger and stronger, and stay away from those things that are going to deplete or diminish or weaken bhakti. And try to make those choices. That's the caution mechanism.
So staying away need not necessarily apply the same way Jira Bharata has done.
You say stay away?
Like stay away things which will stop the...
Well, yeah, isn't it a good idea if somebody's a drunkard to not go to bars or to associate with drunkards? Kind of like a starting point. Somebody that has a gambling addiction or a drug addiction, to stay away from gambling houses and drug dealers. Isn't it a kind of starting point? Stay away from unwholesome association. That's... In Chaitanya Charitamrita, one of the answers that Lord Chaitanya gave was the characteristic of a Vaishnav is a Vaishnav does not associate with those who are averse to Krishna. Asat Sangha Tyag. Hey, Vaishnava Acharya. So that's the stay away. Now, one can stay away and the mind is dwelling on the drug dealer and the gambling house and the prostitute and whatever it is, you know, the opportunity to steal and whatever their compulsion is. So staying away doesn't take care of the problem, but it helps curbing the senses. And can help chasten the mind. It's not the cure. The cure is bhakti. But it helps bhakti. It helps. It doesn't create bhakti, but it helps.
Second question.
Second question.
This is also a left-wing question.
Which question?
Left wing question.
Left wing?
Left wing.
Left wing, okay. Left field, that's the, American expression, left field.
Maharaj, you have kindly presented very elevated topics like Brahma Samhita and Tattva Sandarbha. In Thanksgiving retreats. First part, I didn't know it was being conducted, I missed it. While second part, eagerly waiting to attend, I was preparing myself here in the first part lectures many times, 4 or 5 times. So I was moved with those lectures, very interesting. After the second part, it felt the whole juice has been given within the presentation. The essence.
What has been given?
Juice. The essence of Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita is presented. And since then, the attraction to, inclination to read or try to understand the complex topics has been grown.
Okay.
So here, that's one side, and the other side is, you know, we have to finish the basic books, the 4 books, and move on.
Not just finish them. But I know what you mean. I hope that's what you mean. And then move on. No. So
the inclination to go towards reading complex topics is strong rather than going through the...
Oh, it's strong.
Very strong, wanting to know more, wanting to read that.
Okay, I would recommend not more, but deeper. Just take that energy that says more topics and just redirect that energy in deeper. I mean, just like the Holy Name. Everything's there. Really? Everything's there. So then why do we need books? Because it helps us excavate everything that's there. It helps direct the activities of our life. The more is self-centered and information-oriented, it's not bhakti-oriented. It's the gyani thing that may be within us, and we're just feeding the gyani thing within us instead of the bhakti core. So more deeply, not more information. Whatever more information you receive, best effect is if it helps you go more deeply in the core. Now, you I'm sure you recall, because you attended the classes, at the beginning of those classes, those Thanksgiving classes, each time I've spoken, in this coming one, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to just the prayers of Prahlad Maharaj, just the Bhagavatam. But to try to go more deeply in the prayers of Prahlad Maharaj, the other ones was some devotees expressing, when speaking, public speaking, it's commonly new people in the audience, and so the speaker has to address the audience, and so it's always introductory. Sometimes, can you do something that's not introductory, please? So in response to that request, it's once a year, something that's not introductory. But that not introductory can help one go more deeply into the introductory. Read, not just introductory, but read the core bhakti texts with your antenna up. Not the information antenna, but the bhakti antenna. And let me see how this can feed, nourish, awaken more deeply feelings of devotion to Krishna, and the desire to be in Krishna's service, and the desire to chant more effectively and more consciously and build a good foundation that those non-introductory topics help nourish the foundation of Krishna consciousness.
Thank you very much.
Okay, we're at 9 o'clock. We can have one more question.
Guru Maharaj, how does an elevated devotee like Jada Bharat or Srila Prabhupada distinguish when to tolerate
good question.
Offensive behavior and knowing that it's not beneficial for the other person act differently?
I'll answer your question in a slightly different way, but the answer is it requires a little intelligence. Twice during this recent GBC meeting, I heard, and I think you heard it Shruta Kirti is massaging Prabhupada, and while it's massaging Prabhupada, Prabhupada is speaking about bhakti. Surprise. Speaking about bhakti. And he's speaking about bhakti is grounded in certain principles, and what's important is we never neglect those principles, and then the discussion went there can be some adjustment of details, but never neglect the principles. So Shruti Kirti, massaging Prabhupada, said, Prabhupada, how do you distinguish between a principle and a detail that can be adjusted and a principle that's not to be adjusted? Prabhupada was silent for 2 minutes. Uncharacteristically, you generally have an immediate response, but his response was, that takes a little intelligence. Where does intelligence come from? Intelligence in bhakti comes from Krishna. And intelligence from Krishna in bhakti comes to those who are tesham evanukam partam. Those who are tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam. Those persons get the intelligence. So I'm not there yet, so I don't have the intelligence to discriminate, the answer to the question that you just asked. So what am I to do? Well, at least ask the question, which is what you're doing. And so you're introspecting and not looking at your guna and karma and, which favors me more in this circumstance, but which is pleasing to Krishna more in this circumstance. And just by asking the question, there's protection. And more likely, some indication from Krishna, turn left or right. The bhakti principle is wanting to please Krishna. You want it to be in service to Krishna's part and parcel living entity, devotee or non-devotee, and be in service to Krishna in this circumstance. To what's going to be pleasing to Krishna in this circumstance. What's beneficial for the Krishna consciousness of this person. Take some intelligence that we have to rely on Krishna for that intelligence. We have to do something. Even doing nothing is something. Just remain silent and say nothing. That's an action. So inaction is another action. So we may refrain from choosing because we're uncertain, and that's also a choice. But we're looking for some indication from Krishna. And sometimes we have to make a choice. We just circumstantially have to make a choice. We just, to the best of our capacity, make a choice that's intended for Krishna's pleasure and pray to Krishna that he accepts the intention of your effort. And if I made the wrong choice, please correct me. So those are all subtle things, and it's not easy to go through subtle things, especially when life is fast-paced and moving quickly. The principle of having that mood is the principle of bhakti, and navigating our way through complex, fast-moving life in devotion to Krishna. We just keep exercising that bhakti muscle, and it becomes second nature after some time. And if we recognize that we made a mistake, we say something. Like my speaking to you yesterday. The day before yesterday. Okay, we're going to end Srila Prabhupada's key. I just...